Hello and welcome to Right Through Now, the podcast that helps you stay connected with international news, science and technology, developments around the world, fun stuff I like to think. Well, most of the times anyway. All right, so the US government will pay you up to $500,000 to design a less annoying face mask. Well, at least the spectacle wearers amongst, you know, all of us, I think very easily recognize that wearing masks is more than just a little bit annoying. I think everybody finds wearing masks annoying, but those who wear spectacles really, really get irritated because it's so uncomfortable to wear. They fog up your glasses. It's a nightmare. But apparently, the US government thinks the exact same thing. And let's see what they have to say. Over a year into the pandemic, we've seen a wide variety of masks, from totally unsafe fashion pieces to RGB nightmares, not to mention a bunch of other stylish options. But if you think you might have an idea for a better mask that more people might want to wear, the US government's Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority has announced a competition to design the next generation of masks, with a potential 500,000 total prize waiting for the winners. The Mask Innovation Challenge was created in partnership with the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, an organization under the CDC, to address some of the common complaints leveled at masks, like the fact that they can fog up glasses, irritate your skin, become uncomfortable to wear, get in the way of communication, and potentially let COVID-19 particles through the sides. Yeah, it looks like masks are going to be sticking around for a while. A little bit irritating, but good to see that there are still developments happening in this sector. More interesting news related to COVID. So COVID showed how trials for new drugs could be faster and better. One of the problems with developing, you know, drugs for diseases that commonly plague humanity for whatever proportion, you know, there are more popular diseases, so to speak, that affect so many different people, so many different individuals. And we always hear, especially for stuff like cancer, for instance, we hear tons of time, oh, there's a new cure for cancer, it's being developed, and a new cure for this, a new cure for that, but it just takes forever. But because of the fact that so much acceleration had to be done, you know, everybody in the world made exceptions and green-lighted stuff that was helping even remotely for COVID. So I think naturally it opens the way forward for other drugs to be manufactured and to be studied, to be analyzed, to be developed, I think much faster than they were pre-pandemic. So that's potentially a silver lining in the cloud. A dozen years and $1 billion or more, that is what it typically takes to bring a new drug from the lab to your medicine cabinet. Testing medications on patients has become a slow, arduous process. People, even those who are desperate to participate, often have to travel long distances to a study site and make the trip over and over again. For scientists, coordinating the paperwork among a large number of research centers can be extremely laborious and time-consuming. But the urgency of the pandemic and the dangers it presents are forcing needed changes. For example, investigators have turned to remote data collection methods that are safer and more convenient for participants. John H. Alexander, a cardiologist and senior researcher at the Duke Clinical Research Institute, says this kind of access and other improvements are long overdue. Alexander is steeped in the world of medical research, but he is also a thoughtful critic of how it is done. He's the co-chair of the Clinical Trials Transformation Initiative, a public-private partnership founded by Duke University and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and has long advocated for reforms that would make research smarter, faster, and more accessible to patients without sacrificing quality. I think that's a really cool step in the right direction. Okay, so world's largest ocean monitoring system, BRUVS, has launched. I'm not making that up. That's literally the acronym they use, BRUVS. So what has always fascinated me about the ocean is that it's practically a whole alien world. I mean, chances are wherever there is life outside of Earth, that it's somehow water-based, right? I mean, everybody's in agreement with that, more or less. What happens if most of that life is underwater? I mean, it just logically follows. I mean, it's very high probability that what happens in another world probably happens underwater when, you know, life is concerned. And yet here we are, we have all this water in our backyard. So much of our planet is water, and we understand so little about it. So I think this is vital to study. The interesting thing here is that by the time we take the ocean seriously, we could have potentially destroyed half of it. I don't think there's any record or anybody keeping track of how much of the ocean we've already destroyed. At least the ocean life. Let's see what BRUVS is concerned with. Okay, so Professor Jessica Miewig, the director of the Center for Marine Futures at the University of Western Australia, has told the BBC about her hopes for a new ocean monitoring system. The UK government-funded project, known as BRUVS, will focus on monitoring marine life in 10 British overseas territories, including Pitcairn and Ascension Island. Well, that's really cool. Okay. Hong Kong police have seized a record 700 kilos of cocaine. I think you can get a lot of work done with 700 kilos of cocaine. Okay, Hong Kong police have announced a record-breaking 700-kilo cocaine seizure, with officers suspecting the huge shipment was smuggled into the city on speedboats. The bust is the largest in the territory in nearly a decade and netted some 930 million Hong Kong dollars, worth 119.6 US million dollars of cocaine. Authorities say the collapse of global travel during the coronavirus pandemic has forced smugglers to make riskier bulk shipments instead of using drug mules traveling through airports. Police said the bust was made on Friday when officers intercepted a man with a trolley in the Fortan Industrial District and found 150 bricks of cocaine in cardboard boxes. Jesus Christ. Another 492 bricks were later found in an industrial building in an apartment in the same district, leading to the arrest of two men aged 19 and 25. Christ, these poor people have just ruined their future. All right. So, apparently lions use yawns to signal to others that it's time to get moving. I think yawns are some of the most contagious, you know, signaling that exists in nature, because it's the same, exact same. I don't know if you're in a classroom and one person starts to yawn and then the ripple effect starts, the dominoes fall, and 5 minutes later, everybody's yawning. I guess lions have something similar. Okay, so lions have contagious yawns, and they seem to use the open-mouthed behavior to send signals to each other. The observation provides the first concrete evidence that yawning can synchronize behavior in an animal species. Lions share a lot of things, like highly organized hunts and caring for cubs, quote, says Elisabetta Palagi at the University of Pisa in Italy. So obviously they need to synchronize movement, and they need to communicate and anticipate the actions of their companions. Palagi wasn't planning on investigating yawning lions, but when her master's students were in South Africa collecting data on spotted hyenas at play, they noticed this stuff. That's really incredible, and to be honest, kind of cute as well. You guys remember Yahoo Answers? Well, back when the internet was still relatively young, Yahoo Answers was pretty massive. It was a pretty big deal. And yeah, of course, I mean, now with Quora and more or less nobody gives a shit about Yahoo. The interesting thing to me is that Yahoo still exists fundamentally. You can open your emails and everything. And your original Yahoo email IDs, if you can probably log into them right now. Which is just insane. Okay, Yahoo Answers, one of the longest running and most storied web question and answer platform in the history of the internet, is shutting down on May 4th. That's the day the Yahoo Answers website will start redirecting to the Yahoo homepage, and all of the platform's archives will apparently cease to exist. The platform has been operating since 2005. Yahoo, which is now part of Verizon Media Group following the company's sale to the telecom for nearly $5 billion in 2017, announced the change at the top of the Yahoo Answers homepage. The message links to an FAQ which details the timeline of the shutdown. And starting April 20th, the platform will no longer accept new submissions, the FAQ explains. It's a little bit sad. I think Yahoo Answers was really, really fun. It's just a ton of comedic potential that existed on that website. All right. Sydney's inland suburbs are 10 degrees Celsius warmer than the coast in heat waves. Well, this is something that I never fully expected before I moved to a big city. But inside of cities and, you know, densely packed suburban places, temperatures can swing pretty heavily. And in summers, that makes it insufferable. It's, for one, it's the simple lack of trees. And the other, you know, artificial construction, stuff humans make, like roads and stuff, for instance, especially because they're so dark in color, they tend to really have a negative impact on temperature, and they really cause temperature to be quite a bit higher than the rest of the ambient temperatures. Let's see what the article has to say. So large-scale weather patterns and urban overheating are interacting to make Sydney's inland suburbs up to 10 degrees Celsius warmer than coastal areas during extreme heat events. Urban overheating, it's called apparently, occurs when temperatures in certain parts of an urban environment are comparatively higher than those in surrounding areas. The phenomenon occurs as a result of combination of factors, including heat fluxes linked to human activity and air pollution. What's more, artificial materials used to build roads, roofs, and other urban architecture absorb solar radiation and release it slowly, further heating the air in a way that trees and other vegetation don't. I think there were also some projects related to negating the impact of human-made stuff, especially roads. And there was a project that basically wanted to paint roads white. I'm not sure if they were using paint to paint on over tarmac or if they were using materials that were inherently white. But apparently they said this would make a huge difference. Although one of the concerns was, okay, then there's going to be so much more glare coming from the road that's going to make harder for motorists to concentrate and therefore become a health hazard. But I'm not sure where that project went, but I'll keep a pin on it. Cool. Okay, so companies have backed moratorium on deep sea mining. Well, this is encouraging news, because most of the times when, you know, these big corporate organizations, they make these kinds of decisions, they tend to not give a shit about humanity. So this is kind of encouraging, although I hope it's more than just a PR stunt. Let's take a look. A long-running dispute over plans to start mining the ocean floor has suddenly flared up. For years, it was only environmental groups that objected to the idea of digging up metals from the deep sea. But now, BMW, Volvo, Google, and Samsung are leading their weight to calls for a moratorium on the proposals. The move has been criticized by companies behind the deep sea mining plans, who say the practice is more sustainable in the ocean than on land. The concept, first envisaged in the 1960s, is to extract billions of potato-sized rocks called nodules from the abyssal plains of the oceans several miles deep. Rich in valuable minerals, these nodules have long been prized as the source of a new kind of gold rush that could supply the global economy for centuries. Interest in them has intensified because they may contain cobalt and other metals needed for the countless batteries that will power the electric vehicles of a zero-carbon economy. Yeah, that's the downside of, you know, finding materials to develop electric vehicles and batteries and stuff like that. You need this material from somewhere, and this massive rush into electric vehicles, I mean, of course, it's got to come from somewhere. But I'm not 100% sure if it's really sustainable to start deep sea mining. And I think the people who are backing this moratorium feel the same way. Because, yeah, we have no idea what kind of life, you know, is dependent on these materials and on these minerals. Fundamentally, yes, some life does depend on minerals, so that's going to be an interesting step. Let's see what these companies continue to do to find a source for the cobalt elsewhere then. All right, so apparently there's been a Facebook data breach, and the private data of so many people has been compromised. It's just incredible. I think I was reading in the news yesterday that Mark Zuckerberg's personal phone number was one of the points of information that was leaked during this breach. So upwards of 533 million Facebook users from 106 countries had personal data leaked online, including phone numbers, Facebook IDs, birth dates, you name it. Okay, so there's one well-known site that tracks data breaches, is Have I Been Pwned? And yeah, you're just going to have to Google that, and potentially you'll be led to a website where you can check if your data has been breached. But be careful when logging into third-party websites, because that could be the breach. It's kind of tricky. Sad news. LG is confirming it's shutting down its mobile phone business. I think it's just become so incredibly competitive that, you know, even a giant like LG cannot sustain itself. Let's see what the article has to say. The reports of its native Korea were correct. LG is shutting down its mobile business, with losses continuing to mount and billions of dollars seemingly squandered on quirky handsets. The electronics giant has officially thrown in the towel on its struggling phone division. In a statement, the company said, quote, moving forward, LG will continue to leverage its mobile expertise and develop mobility-related technologies such as 6G to help further strengthen competitiveness in other business areas. Well, that's kind of sad, but on the other hand, I can't really remember any LG phone that I particularly gave a shit about, so maybe it's just, maybe that's the problem. Nobody bought LG cell phones. Okay, so robot guide dog could help people who are blind navigate. Guide dogs are expensive to train, so robots could provide a cheaper alternative to help people who are blind. And what I'm looking at is the image. It looks kind of like a Boston Dynamics dog, but I think it's made from made by a company called Naver. I'm not sure if it's, you know, using the patents that that the other guys developed, but not sure. Guide dogs offer social, physical, and mental benefits for some people who are blind, but training them is costly and a lengthy process, so researchers have created a robotic alternative. Zhongyu Li at the University of California, Berkeley, and his colleagues programmed a four-legged dog-like robot to safely guide people with a lead, even when faced with obstacles and narrow passages. Yeah, I think one of the problems with this kind of technology is that, I mean, yes, like, it's comparing artificial intelligence to human intelligence, it's like, you know, it might work for most circumstances but when critical applications suddenly appear, then you need human intelligence, right? So I feel like it's kind of the same way with guide dogs. It's a living thing. It cares for itself, and therefore you're going to have an inherent advantage when you're looking for a robot guide dog. I mean, it's just not going to be the same. A robot guide dog isn't going to have the same incentive to survive as a living guide dog would. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. How do you feel about this? Feel free to reach out. I'm relatively easy to find on social media. Okay, cool. So next up, NASA's Ingenuity Mars helicopter touches down and prepares for flight. Now that it's on the surface, the interplanetary aircraft could soar as early as next week. Yeah, this is something that I find really cool. I've brought it up in past episodes as well, but there's a helicopter on Mars, which is just gives me immense pride to say. NASA's Mars helicopter Ingenuity touched down on the surface of the red planet after being dropped by its mothership, the Perseverance rover, the space agency announced late Saturday on April 4th. The helicopter's first flight is just over a week away. Weighing just at 4 pounds or 1.8 kilograms, Ingenuity is a tiny solar-powered helicopter that relies on a rechargeable battery to keep its system warm during the harsh Martian night. Until today, Ingenuity has been attached to Perseverance's belly, feeding off the rover's nuclear-powered system to stay warm. Now the helicopter is using its internal battery to power a vital heater. This heater keeps the interior at about 45 degrees Fahrenheit, through the bitter cold of the Martian night, where temperatures can drop to as low as minus 130 degrees Fahrenheit, which is minus 90 degrees Celsius. Jesus Christ, it gets nippy. NASA's Bob Ballaron, chief engineer for the Mars helicopter project, wrote in a status update on Friday that comfortably protects key components such as the battery and some of the sensitive electronics from harm at very cold temperatures. Ingenuity is expected to make its first flight on April 11th, with the data from that test reaching Earth on April 12th, NASA officials have said. The $85 million drone is the first helicopter ever sent to another world and is designed to test technologies for future flying vehicles on other planets. Ingenuity carries two cameras to document its flights, which will also be observed by the Perseverance rover. That is just fantastically cool. All right, well, that about wraps it up from my side. Thank you so very much for listening, and see you next time. Ciao.